So, welcome to Reflections, a curious history of dating and relationships. So, why am I drawn to talking about dating and relationships? Well, I'm absolutely fascinated by people, human beings, the psychology, excuse me, what drives us, and also how things have changed over the last few hundred years, in particular, dating and relationships and what it means to be a woman. And depending on what class you were in and what country you grew up in, could really sort of differentiate your experience of the time. So things shifted when Queen Victoria announced her wedding to Albert in 1840. It was actually seen as a radical union. One is because she popped the question, and second, because apparently they were madly in love. So this now set a different bar for everyone else, that love could be something that is something to reach for, rather than seeing it in the way that it had in previous centuries. Industrialization brought with it more freedom and money, and women were able to gain their own independence and work, move from the small villages into places like London, where Harrods and Marks and Spencers set up their new mature brands for the mainstream middle class and upper class working shop shopkeepers. And women were able to live their lives, go out, party, and have a little bit more freedom than they had in previous times. So what was also kept behind closed doors was now becoming more open. But it wasn't until the work of Kingsey in the late 60s, where the idea of sex, how you do it, what effects it has on the body, and how females might actually enjoy it too, was actually starting to be researched. Kingsey had done a lot of work with students who were in early on in their relationships, who were really looking for some advice and support. But he actually was one of the first people to start looking at the way the human body is designed, and that women could actually start to enjoy this, but prior to that weren't seen as sexual beings in their own right. So the ideas about who we are as women and what we were able to do, our social mobility was really based on class at the time, where we grew up, who was in the family and what we had access to. So although things have started to change for women and our ideas about what we were able to do, that was still very much curtailed. And our ideas about social mobility and standards really came from the numerous manuals on dating, courtesy and courtships of the time. So, for example, and we still see this today, a lady of high rank, if she married someone of a lower rank, she would be seen as existing in his rank. But if a gentleman married a lady of a lower rank, she would actually rise to the same rank as he would. So high society was very much the idea about how you stay in your rank and choose people that aren't going to actually affect the way that other people see you. So the ways that people garnered interest and showed that interest varied really, but in cities like London, high society used things such as calling cards, where they'd first introduce themselves to the ladies of interest or to their family. Women were still chaperoned, and they could only visit the ladies at home when they were chaperoned, usually by a family member who would also want to know a lot about them to make sure that they weren't a cad and just after their family inheritance. Not much has changed there, although our mothers and fathers probably have a lot less to do with the choices that we make through dating and who we get married to. So it came a little bit easier to show interest in people around the time of Valentine's Day. Victorians loved Valentine's Day. Lots of cards were sent out, and they also loved flowers, which meant different things. So it was almost like you could send a message to somebody through flowers and through Valentine's Day to show your interest in them. And letters became the way that people who started to see each other and entered into romance could share their thoughts and feelings, you know, and send each other beautiful letters. And actually, I remember up until, only about 10 years ago, I had a pen friend, a very good friend of mine, and we used to love writing letters to each other. And I used to really look forward to getting those letters. However, my early experience of online dating quite a few years ago, that just because somebody wrote really well and reams of information didn't mean to say that you were going to be attracted to them when you sat down together in real life. You know, but that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. And I think we look for different things or are inspired by different things. And maybe we were 70, 80 years ago. So as time moved on, balls and dances, Valentine's Day were all the different ways that people could show their attraction and get the interest of the person that they wanted to spend more time with and start to date and head towards marriage. It was still, though, the only way that anyone could show their interest. It was the male that did that. And working class women were now spending more and more time in theatres and shows. However, everything changed around the First World War, and life would never be the same again. In 1914, 700,000 men from the UK died in that first war. And the age of consent had risen, and there was now a lot of young women enamoured by men in army clothes, and there were men stationed across the UK. So the whole behavior around what you do when you come from the battlefield, what happens in terms of how you need to heal, and then you really need a good stiff drink at the weekend because it might be that you go back on the field and no one sees you again after about a month, meant that the short-term view of life really sort of developed around that time. The way that men and women would meet and get to know each other also changed. So women were now able to invite men over for tea, and at the same time, the ability to have access to a chaperone was also lost. So things changed massively. Fashion changed. Many women now in the war effort now needed to be more mobile and wear clothes that were more practical than they wanted comfort over style in much of the way. Of course, when we look at some of the early pictures, women still looked really good, even though they wore combats and fatigues. So the art of writing really developed, and a lot of relationships were developed as people wanted to help young men on the battlefronts. And writing letters to people rose dramatically, leading to many men and women actually proposing to each other before they even met. When men were on leave, they partied hard, and the rates of sexual diseases became rife. So there was lots of effort at that time with the government to really try and curb the looseness of behaviour and what was happening at the time. But due to the amount of men losing their lives, there was now a real shortage of eligible men to marry. Some women saw this as their opportunity, though, to pursue the freedom that they really desired and opt out of the drudgery which marriage was often seen. So I want to introduce you to another book called Singled Out, and it's by Virginia Nicholson, and it was how 2 million women survived without men after the First World War. It's a beautiful book because it's got lots of personal stories in there of women who were interviewed that were around at that time. So the book says that it often seems that the single woman today, as though available men are getting scarcer, but there was nothing new about young women who can't find relationships. In the First World War, deprived Britain of 750,000 soldiers, leaving as many more incapacitated. In 1919, a generation of women unquestionably believed marriage to be their birthright, discovered that they were quite simply not enough men to go around, and they became known as the surplus women. I think it was seven women to every one man, so the potential to get married and settle down with anyone got really difficult. So many of us remember that our teachers were mostly maiden aunts, because women, when they got married, often had to give up their job in order to either the men had the jobs or to raise children. So this book tells the stories of the students weeping for the lost world of armistice, and the socialite who dedicated her life to resurrecting the past after the soldier that she loved was killed. The Bradford Mill girl, whose campaign to better the lot of war spinsters was to make the pu first public figure, and many who reinvented themselves. So this traces the fates of many of those women, some who endured loneliness and isolation, and many who fought the system, and some who enjoyed the newfound freedom of being able to work, have their own money, party, and set up a really different way of living life as a woman. So I hope you enjoyed part two of A Curious Way of Looking at Dating and Relationships.